Hello, and welcome to the 42nd episode of the 6th season of the Ubuntu podcast. In this episode, we're going to discuss what Alan's been playing with recently. We've also got another time-saving tip, and we'll read your feedback. If you're listening or watching live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are Alan.
Hello.
Sorry. Not sure why that was so funny. Tony.
Good evening.
And Laura.
Hiya.
What have you been up to then, Laura?
Poison Tony. And then I went to...
Sorry.
Thing Monk.
You did what?
Poison Tony.
Oh, dear.
Food poisoning. Yeah. That's why he's still ill.
Still ill
from last week.
And then what?
And then I went to Thing Monk. I left him in his sick bed.
I saw a lot about Thing Monk on Twitter.
Yeah.
What is it?
It was a conference... about Internet of Things. And I bought a copy of Designing the Internet of Things by Adrian McEwen, who's an OGCamper.
Oh, cool. All
and right. I got it signed by him.
Oh, awesome.
Did he recognize you?
On eBay shortly.
Yes, he knows me.
What's the Internet of Things in a tweet?
It's instead of people being between the devices and the internet, it's where the devices talk directly or connected directly to the internet and there's no people in between.
So are they sending messages to one another or are they just broadcasting messages out?
Potentially, backwards and forwards.
Uh-huh.
But also, say, like your home automation stuff, that's Internet of Things. Because you've got sensors sending information to the internet and you could automate things going back again, but people have still got to live in that environment and how they understand that environment is really important because they'll try and understand it and then it could confuse them or they might assume something's happening that isn't happening and so.
And where, how long was this? And was it like conference as in lectures and talks and stuff?
It was one day. It's a single track thing, so you just sit and watch everything all the way through, cracking food.
Nothing about the talks, just...
Oh, yeah, the talks were good.
Excellent.
But Dan Lynch gets a thank you in it as well. There's lots of Sue Black.
In the book, you mean?
Andy, yeah, in the book, sorry, not in the conference. And Andy Piper, and yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Cool. Alan, what have you been doing?
I have my laptop fixed today.
What do you do to it?
An IBM engine. Well, it's been overheating for ages.
Right.
It's been like running at 90 degrees. I've got this little sensor app on it.
Ow.
And it tells me it runs at, more than that, 90, 95, especially when I want to hang out, which is a lot at work.
Yeah.
It was kind of annoying me, and eventually it overheated so much that it shut itself down.
Which isn't good.
No, so I phoned Lenovo and they sent an engineer and he came out today and replaced the fan and the heatsink. And now it runs at a balmy 70 degrees when I'm doing a hangout. But under normal circumstances, it's fine. It keeps it at 70 degrees. It doesn't like overheat anymore. It's brilliant. Cool.
So you'd recommend Lenovo's after sales care?
Yeah, I would actually. Given that all I did was phone the guy up phone Lenovo. I didn't randomly phone this guy up. Phone Lenovo support, and he said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "It's overheating, going to 90 degrees and shutting down." He went, "Okay, I'll see if we've got the part." I was like, "Oh." I thought I'd have to provide diagnostics or more data for this support call. But no, he just said, we'll send someone out on Wednesday. And the guy came out and he had a fan and heatsink assembly, stripped the entire laptop down to nothing, like everything out of the case, put the new one in and booted it up. And it's been perfect ever since. And I am so happy.
Cool.
I thought it was a kernel bug, but it's not. It's
brilliant.
Rubbish hardware.
Mm. Tony, what have you been up to other than being poisoned?
Oh, I've been so ill. It's ridiculous. Today I did some very exciting photography stuff, which I can't tell you about.
Oh.
It is exciting.
Is it a wedding?
No, not a wedding, although obviously that's, I do a lot of
those. Are these private photographs which you're not allowed to... the kind which you develop in your garden shed rather than taking them to the chemist?
It's the kind that he will probably blog about eventually, so no.
Okay, then.
But that's the wonder of digital, Mark, is you don't have to take those to the... should you be into that market, which I'm not. But no, these were for... a project for another company, which is very exciting.
Cool,
but I can't tell you about it.
Oh,
I'm,
Mr.
We'll
it's frustrating.
Wait to hear about it on your blog. Then,
how about you, Mark?
2016.
I've been playing Doom 3 BFG Edition.
Is that good?
Friendly giant,
something like that.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's good fun because I played the original when it came out about 8 years ago, and they released a Linux port of the original version, and they've open sourced this version, but they never made a Linux port of it. So some clever old stick
on GitHub has taken the open source version and I guess learnt from the old Linux port and made a Linux port of the new version.
Nice.
So I just downloaded it, compiled it, and installed. You have to install the data files, which needs Windows version of Steam.
They're not open source, are they? So yeah, you need the data.
So you need the Windows version of Steam, which you can do through Wine, but I happen to be using a dual booting laptop.
Actually, I think I've got a DVD with Doom 3 on the original.
Yeah, so you can just get the port from that.
Oh, right.
So yeah, so I installed it on Windows partition on the laptop, then I switched over, mounted the Windows partition, compiled this binary from GitHub, and then pointed at the data files with a symlink and ran it, and hey presto.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Super. Should we crack on? So, as you know, I've been backing a few things on Kickstarter and Indiegogo over the last year or so.
Mm-hmm. And a few.
I think I've overdone it this year. But something arrived this week. One of my new things, and it's a kind of 3D printer.
Uh-huh.
What kind of 3D printer is it?
A kind of 3D printer that you hold in your hand. Ooh. It's called a 3Doodler. And for the benefit of the camera, for those watching, I'm holding it in my hand now. It's like a big, fat pen.
It's approximately 6 inches long.
Yeah, yeah.
Black, quite chunky.
Yeah, it's got a couple of buttons on it.
Yeah.
And a switch, and it takes power through a power cable from a mains adapter. But I backed this some time ago, and it's just arrived. And it's quite cool.
Okay, why is it cool?
It's cool because I quite like the idea of having a 3D printer, but I didn't like the idea of having a great big bulky thing or spending £500 on one.
Because often 3D printers are about the size of a suitcase and have cogs and things that whir around.
Look like the brick easily.
People I know, who like Hugo, who has one, spends most of his time unclogging the nozzles rather than printing things.
Yeah, and tweaking and adjusting. And I mean, to be fair, there are some people who have 3D printers that just work. Mm. And there are ones that you can buy that arrive ready to go and you take it out of the box and off you go. But they're, you know, 10 times the cost of this thing.
Right.
And the other thing about this is it's not a 3D printer in that a standard 3D printer has a bed and a nozzle that's motor controlled, computer controlled, and will move backwards and forwards, up and down, and will deploy the plastic in a very uniform fashion. This is like handwriting plastic. It's like having a glue gun with plastic.
So this is a plastic extruding 3D printer rather than a resin setting ultraviolet light type one.
Yes. Yes, and so you stick a piece of plastic in the a length of plastic in the
a
end,
like
of
you
it.
Would with a propelling pencil,
or exactly.
A glue gun, or a glue gun. In fact, more like a glue gun.
It is very much a glue gun. It takes the two main types of plastic is PLA and ABS. I don't know what that means, but
anti-lock braking, I think, is
right. Yeah, thanks, Tony. Keep staying being ill, When you turn the thing on, it heats up to the requisite temperature in order to melt the plastic. And then once it's at the relevant temperature, you just press a button and it starts extruding the plastic. And you basically draw on a page with it. That's it. And it comes out hot, but then cools so quickly that by the time you finish drawing your thing, you can peel it off the page and it's, you know, set hard.
So when we say it's like 3D, you have to layer up the plastic like you would with a 3D printer, or can you actually draw things upwards, as it were?
Yeah, both of those things. So yeah, you can lay down layers.
Yeah.
You can also do a construction where you have lots of flat pieces that you connect together to make it three dimensions.
Do you glue them with the plastic like a soldering iron?
Yeah, I did. So Tony's got a pair of glasses that I made with my daughter over there, and they're basically one piece is the front piece where the surround for where the glass would be, and then there's two pieces for the arms, and the arms are just like one pattern that you just draw twice.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just stuck them together just by holding the pieces together and then draw around it a little bit in order to kind of melt it and glue it together. And it took us half an hour to make a pair of glasses, And they're a little bit fragile because I only went over the thing once. But, you know, Mark said you could draw in 3D. You know, if I went over it two or three times, it would make it thicker and it would make it a little bit more robust because it's just one line of the plastic. It's a little bit fragile.
For those watching on the video stream, I am now slowly rotating the glasses in front of the camera.
To prove they are in fact 3D and not just drawn with brilliant perspective.
I think you really should put them on, Tony.
I might have to take my headphones off for a minute.
Okay.
I think you should take a still of it and then we can put it on the show notes.
That's probably a good idea. So when you made these glasses, did you design them yourself or is there a repository of 3D object designs available?
Stand still, Tony. There we go. We've got a screenshot.
Excellent, brilliant. Thank you.
I went to the 3 Doodler website.
Right.
You know, like a lot of 3D printers recommend you go to Thingiverse or GitHub or something like that and you download a pattern and send it to your 3D printer.
Yes.
Well, with this, you go to the 3 Doodler website and you download a piece of paper.
Right.
And you print that out.
So that's a series of 2D shapes to print rather than... Because obviously you can't get a Blender file and then draw the whole 3D.
Yeah. And so, you know, in one way you could just, like, draw flat and fill in and then, you know, build it up. There's one that they showed in the Kickstarter video, which was the Eiffel Tower, which was they did four sides the same and then bring them together to make the full tower and lots of other bits to construct. Good. Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it would probably be quite time consuming, I would imagine, but quite worthwhile to have this, you know, plastic Eiffel Tower.
So your glasses are a natty green colour.
They are, yes.
But I see you have packets of what look like pencils.
Yeah, or so plasticine. They look like, the kind of packs of plasticine you get with lots of different colours. I ordered when I backed it. One of the options was to have a pack of different colours, and
so you got six.
Each pack has got five colours in it. So there's like a red, yellow, green, blue, and there's a pink. There's a kind of light colours, and there's some kind of earthy, less desirable colours as well.
they're for practicing with
thrown in the box as well. Well, the brown one if you want to do a retro Ubuntu logo, I guess. And the other question that Mark asked was about drawing directly upwards. You kind of can, and in the video they do show the guy holding the pen on the page and then just pulling upwards slowly, and it can set just about it can go cold just about enough that you can draw straight up, but it's not very stable, and it's not very reliable. You kind of, and this is where it kind of falls apart a little bit, is the way in which you can draw. You have to really plan out your construction. So if you want to draw something like a tube,
yes,
that's really quite hard.
Yeah,
because if you think of a tube laying down on its side, you lay down one line for the very bottom, and then you start laying additional lines to try and build it up, and then you kind of get stuck because
the bits nothing fall to support either the side. Top
there's,
bit,
there's no structure to support it.
Yeah.
So you have to be kind of inventive about how you. Draw certain
but
shapes.
I mean, that's the same with any 3D printer. You have to be careful about where you're going to have holes and where you need scaffolding and so on.
It's quite cool because that's something that engineers do all the time, but typically we don't. We normally work in 2D, even if you're making cubes and things in maths classes. It's always about the, you know, folding it up, but to actually design that template in the first place is quite a lot of sort of mental rotation and things, so it's pretty cool practicing that.
And on the website where you can print out these plans for stuff you can draw, it's a bit disappointing actually that then there's not enough really inventive stuff there that people have done yet. Now, granted, I was one of the first backers, so I'm one of the first, I don't know, few thousand people who have one. So not a lot of people have come up with designs and submitted them to the website. So it's early days, but a lot of the designs, they've seemed to have seeded with basically just clip art, you know, like pictures of, you know, there's a Christmas decorations one, which is basically lots of 2D clip art that you're basically expected to trace over. Right. But I think they're just there to give you ideas and to seed the site with something.
I want one now. I could really get into doing 3D Christmas decorations.
Yeah, it's funny. I took it over to the in-laws at the weekend to show them, and they said, "Oh, what can you do with it?" And I said, "Well, you know, what do you want me to do with it?" And the kids said, "Oh, can you make me a ring with some decoration on it?" So I did a cylinder, went round and round and round and round once, and then I changed the colour of the plastic that was in it. And when you change the colour of the plastic, because there's some plastic still inside, when you put a new stick in, there's a period of time where it transitions from whatever colour was in there to the new colour. So you don't quite know when the new colour's going to arrive. And then there's a transition period where you go from the old colour to the new colour. And that's most noticeable if you go like from white to red or something. Yeah. You're doing white and then suddenly it's a bit pink and then it's all red. But for making kids like play jewellery or something like that, then... You know, it's quite good fun, and you can like decorate it, but you have to be quite careful. You probably would want some of those claws that you would use for soldering or circuit work, or something that could hold it. Because I was holding it in my fingers, because the tip gets really hot. It was, I could feel the heat from the thing, on my fingers when I was trying to decorate this little ring for the kids.
I want one for Christmas. Are they selling them yet?
I don't. I'm not sure if that's Tony being ill or illness induced by the fact he has to buy a present. I don't think you can get them yet. I think you can pre-order them because that was the October Kickstarter group. And I got that a week ago in November. The November group have just started shipping, and then there's the December. And then, so I think if you pre-ordered it, you wouldn't get it till like early next year.
No, it's over the Christmas holidays, I'm thinking. That'd be cool.
Yeah, no chance.
Decorate the house in plastic.
One of the other things about it is it does make a bit of noise. It has a motor in it that pulls the plastic through and feeds it into the hot end, and it also has a fan to cool down. They've obviously realized that this thing gets hot and they need to cool the thing down again, so there's a fan in there. So if I just start drawing now, it's heated up, and if I start drawing, you'll probably hear it on the mic. It's got two buttons for two different speeds,
high and low.
It's not working. I wonder if I've...
Welcome to tomorrow's world.
Yes. So, yeah, it is a little bit noisy and...
just buzzes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's basically just the motor.
Like a dentist.
Oh, man.
If you could imagine what something quite noisy sounds like.
No, I think you broke it.
So, yeah. the two buttons give you different speeds. Is it... do you need the slow version to get used to using it, and then the fast one is when you're better, or are they for sort of different types of drawing?
I haven't had enough practice. I guess I started with the slow because I thought, well, if I press the fast, it's all going to come flying out. It's going to be spraying plastic all over the room, which is actually not the case.
Right.
When you press the button, it comes out fairly slowly, whichever one you use. And actually the fast one is preferable. When I did the glasses,
yeah,
I actually used the fast mode because I was traversing long lines, and actually it's quite hard to hold something rigid and go backwards and forwards and steady and slowly, so you have to kind of keep stopping and starting every so often, otherwise your arm aches a lot.
So the fast mode lets you do more of a sort of natural speed of drawing a straight line.
There we go. It's started working. So it's hard to actually talk into the microphone while I'm doing this, I'm sure you can probably hear the noise this is making.
Well, hopefully, listeners, you're listening to the sound of a motor.
Yes. And is that the fan going as well?
Yes.
Right.
That's mostly the fan.
Yeah. It does sound kind of like an electric toothbrush. So you're drawing there. You're drawing on a piece of paper. Is it now just going to be stuck to the piece of paper forever?
Not forever. a while, until I let it cool down a little bit. But it cools down really, really quickly. I mean, I've just drawn a little square.
Right.
But I can pick it off straight away. What I tend to do though is peel the paper or roll the paper so that it just kind of pops off.
Oh, I see. It just pops off. Okay.
Yeah, like that.
And it's not snapping as you put it, so it's fairly sort of
bendy, isn't it? So
yeah.
I mean, that's only one line of the stuff. You would generally go over it more than once to build it up. In the same way that you wouldn't draw one line with a conventional 3D printer, you'd build up the structure a little bit.
Wow, I think that's a podcasting first. Alan drawing a square with plastic, live on the internet. Next time, are you going to go for a star or something slightly more complicated?
Well, you just don't know, do you?
The LED on it's gone green now.
Yeah, it's got three states. It's like red when it's heating up, green when it's ready to go, and blue if you're using the different type of plastic ABS, because it's got two temperatures for the two types of plastic.
And there's on the back, there's two holes.
Yeah, for
tell
mounting.
Us about the holes.
The holes were a surprise that backers were told about fairly towards the end of the thing. That's so you can mount it somehow on something. And so people
does this thing exist yet?
Well, some people have constructed things out of Lego Mindstorms.
Ooh.
So, you know, you could make a 3D printer.
With that as the nozzle.
Yeah. Brilliant. And yeah, you don't actually have to buy this plastic. I mean, they recommend, you know, buy our plastic.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's designed for the thing and it's tested. But, you know, potentially you could buy a cheap roll of plastic, which is way cheaper than buying these little sticks of plastic.
Mm-hmm.
And much more convenient because you could get a continuous feed in.
Yes.
Or, a longer feed than just having these little sticks. But the thing is, the little sticks are quite convenient because you can just sit there and draw for a little bit and then change the colour of something else.
Mm.
And you're not stuck with one colour forever.
Well, Tommy Bobbins, who's listening live and is in the RC channel, suggested that on hearing the noise that your laptop might be overheating again.
Yeah.
You probably a similar temperature.
It's just a bit noisier than a computer fan, yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Dave, for telling us about your exciting new toy, Alan.
And now we've got some command line love. This one's explainshell.com, and it's not actually a command line thing, but you can put commands from a command line into this web page and press a button saying explain, and it tells you something.
So this has basically got all of the man pages from all of the command line tools in the Ubuntu repository, I believe, parsed and in a database. So you paste in a command with a load of options and arguments, and it basically picks apart each one, finds it in the man page for that command, and then gives you a little thing saying, well, you've called this command which does this, and you've given it this option with this argument, so that means it's going to do... Yeah, exactly. So you've said, you know, you've said grep, and you've said R, which means it's going to be recursive, and this is the pattern you've used, and these are the files you're searching. And you can, like, chain commands together, and it'll... Yeah, it pulls the bits out of the man pages, so you don't have to go... You don't have to like go hunting through a man page to work out what a command's going to do. And this is going to be particularly handy if you're, say, you know, you've asked a question on Ask Ubuntu or a forum or something, and someone said, oh, just use this command, and you want to check what the command's actually going to do. It's a really good way of looking it up quickly.
It's good, but it's a bit limited. I just put in ls latr, and it said ls and what ls does, and then it went through each of the parameters one after the other, which was quite cool, and it told me what each of those parameters does.
Yeah.
But I tried sudo apt-get dist upgrade.
I just did that as well.
And it tells me that sudo executes a command as another user, and then the bit apt-get dist upgrade tells me, I think, a parameter for sudo. It doesn't figure out that that is the command that I would
want
to run.
So if you just do apt-get dist upgrade, does it give you something a bit more useful?
Right. It gives you exactly what you'd expect.
Well,
it tells you what
is,
apt does and then what dist upgrade does.
So you can file a bug on GitHub.
Yeah, I'll do that.
There's a link on there to the GitHub page for it. And there's various other... One of the other issues which has been reported is that if you have a big command with lots of arguments, it then displays the explanation out of order, because what it does is each explanation is joined to the bit in the command by a line. So when you hover over it, you can see which bit you're looking at. But the only way to do that with a long line is to start off by doing the stuff in the middle first, so it can have a line going straight down, and then you have the bit at the beginning somewhere in the middle and the bit at the end somewhere near the bottom, so the lines can go around the outside, which does make it a bit hard to scan down.
Right.
But
it's pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. I like it.
Hmm.
It's time for your feedback, and to start with, Martin emailed in with some help improving command line history handling.
So this was following on from a thing last time where we had, was it command line love? Where you could search your history, your command history. So he's suggesting several ways to improve command line history handling.
Oh, because we were complaining that if you have lots of shells open...
Oh, yeah, they don't put the history in the same place.
They don't save your history in the same place, yeah.
Yeah, so there's lots of different things. One, where you can set the history list to append to a file that's named... rather than when the shell exits, rather than overwriting the file, because I think we were saying that every terminal overwrote the file so that only the last terminals were saved.
Right.
Yeah. One about saying the maximum number of lines in the history, one's how many history entries will actually be stored in memory, and one, if you want all your shells to share a common command history, you can set something else, and you can stick all of this in the Bash RC user profile.
Awesome. Brilliant. That's really good. Mm. I'm going to do that because, yes, I'm still suffering with that.
Cool.
Jesse Paulson from Canada emailed us to tell us a dirty little Linux secret he found.
It seems that Linux file systems do not currently support creation date / birth date metadata.
Outrageous.
When you create a file in Ubuntu, the value of C time works as a creation time. But if you modify its size or permissions, C time is reset, and there is no record of the file's actual birthday.
Oh.
So you can't buy it a present.
Oh.
It seems so strange to me that something so fundamental to DOS, Windows and Mac file systems just doesn't exist in Ubuntu. It is sometimes something that all of us should be aware of, especially when transferring files between operating systems. In my research, I discovered that the stat command supports a B time, but for reasons I'm not quite geeky enough to grok... even though he is geeky enough to use the word grok.
Yes.
There are some memory space and kernel thingies that are meant that mean that the B time field is never populated. Is there a means of implementing the birthday function in Ubuntu? There are workarounds for JPEG where the creation date is stored in the EXIF data, but standard text files lose this information with regular file operations.
I did not know that.
It's a worry.
Commit all your files to version control.
Come across that, actually. And there was something at work where we on one platform we found that I think it'd been written for Unix, so it did. Written for Windows, so it did do that. And then on the other platform, we were like, "Why is it not working?"
It's interesting. Tony dismisses this as not particularly useful information, perhaps. But
I think you take me askance, sir.
I'll blame it on your illness. But actually, this week I had to try and find out the original date of a file to help corroborate someone's story of when they did a piece of work. Because they did a piece of work and someone, suspected that the work was done later, and we wanted to go back in time and check the file system to see that actually, no, that work was done when they said it was done at a certain point in time. And it can be pretty useful.
Were you able to do it?
Yeah, but I was on a Mac at the time. So, I didn't come across this particular problem.
Right.
But what I'm saying is that there are situations where I would want to see the creation time of a file. I can see how that is a problem.
Mm. Robert from SoCal, USA emailed...
I noticed on the last podcast you didn't mention Ubuntu's new streamlined desktop icons. I spotted this report on Engadget.com's website last week talking about it. I thought Ubuntu's desktop icons looked good.
Oh.
This is the mobile icons.
I clicked through to the article and those icons don't look like our icons. Those are the mobile icons, aren't they?
Yes. Desktop and mobile icons redesigned and united at last, the article says. So,
this is for the next release, is it?
Yeah, hopefully in time for 14.04.
Right. Cool. So they're going to... Yeah, the icons on the... I'm not sure how to describe them. There's a certain something about the icons on the mobile.
They look like Android KitKat.
Do they?
Yeah.
My icons on KitKat don't seem to have changed very much.
Oh, mine have.
They're all white.
They're all white.
They're all within the Ubuntu shape.
Oh,
within the Ubuntu, what's the Ubuntu shape?
The Ubuntu shape is a very well defined squircle. Yeah, it's a square with rounded corners.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's a very specific shape, and the
So it's not just
the radius
not just
of the corners
an
is very
icon
defined.
On a sort of translucent square like it is at the moment.
So
this is for all of the default apps.
All of the default apps, and some of the user submitted apps are using the same format and same styling. A lot of them are discussing with the design team how to do the best style icons.
Cool.
And we have people working on icons for the next release.
And finally, the debate about Tony's jingles goes on.
Oh, yeah, oh poor good. Jingles.
Yeah, leave my jingles out of it.
Ian Roberts says, please stop the "we need you, yes you" jingle and add more quizzes.
More quizzes is capitalised. More quizzes.
More quizzes, yes.
Anton Piatek said, yes, I can't remember the last time you UPC did a quiz.
Fair enough. And Alistair Grant replied that we should keep both.
We should have quizzes and jingles.
Jingles and quizzes.
No time for anything else then.
So let's just carry on as we were.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe we should do a Christmas quiz.
Oh.
Ooh. I like the sound of that. That would keep everyone happy, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Everybody would be a winner. Right. Enjoy this one then, Alistair.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that pleases, puzzles, or piques you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And remember, if we don't hear from you, we might not have enough content, and that can only mean one thing: more quizzes.
I think a quiz next time would be great.
That's all for this episode. Thank you for listening. The next live show will be on the Wednesday, the 18th of December, and will be the last one of the year.
Yeah, the last live show of the year already. Boo. And then we have a break, don't we? We'll go on holiday together.
Something like that.
Yes. And we send back photos of us sitting on the beach with our Android phones and...
Is this going to be like the bit at the end of the series of end of a series of Hustle where we break the fourth wall and say goodbye to all the viewers?
Or 2.4 children for those of us who understand things like that.
Okay. Did they do on 2.4 children as
well?
They
always had like a musical with Christmas jumpers and then say bye.
Oh, okay.
Merry Christmas.
Let's do that now then. Bye.
Merry Christmas.